tweet at TodaySOR.
In an ever more competitive jobs market, it's important to know what skills are essential in terms of getting a job and then getting ahead once you have a job. For some help in identifying those skills and in finding the best approach to managing your career, I'm joined now in studio again by workplace expert Paul Mooney. Paul, thanks for coming in again. You're going to run through a number of scenarios that people have come up against in their careers and so forth. But I suppose maybe to start in an obvious place, somebody is going for a new job, they've been called to interview, and they believe they have the basic qualifications and skills, but so will all of the other competitors. So sure, take it from there in how you would advise them.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's a common one. It's a common fear, isn't it? And something that we all face a couple of times in our lives to go for interviews. Yeah, there's a couple of points. I mean, they almost seem like baby points, but, you know, you can confuse simple with simplistic. They're simple ideas, but they're important ideas. I suppose the first point, Sean, is to know a little bit about the industry. The example I'm just thinking of, just reading the paper outside there, was that if you were going for a job in the food industry, you'd have to know maybe that the milk quota was being lifted now. If you're going for a job, say, in Derrygold in Mitchelstown, and you might know a little bit about the industry, or specifically the second point about Derrygold itself, if Derrygold was the interviewer, or Google or Facebook or General Electric or whoever it was you were going to work for. The third one, and I'm often surprised that people do so little of this, is preparing for the interview itself. And people don't do mock interviews, generally speaking. They just kind of show up and see what happens on the day. And I'm surprised, given the importance of jobs, that people don't prepare themselves more by putting themselves through a mock interview, either with a HR specialist or somebody who knows the game, or even through panel interviews for more serious or more senior jobs. I'm really surprised that people don't. In a sense, it's a bit like the military thing, that you train hard and fight easy.
Yeah, I remember actually going for one job in here many, many years ago and doing a mock interview with somebody, and it was videotaped, and the guy who did it just handed me the tape. He said nothing, and he didn't need to, because I was absolutely appalled by the performance. Didn't get the job afterwards anyway. So, but I suppose that's it's a basic thing, though, isn't it?
It's a basic thing.
The dress rehearsal.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think of musicians going on stage and all the rehearsals they'd put into a show or whatever, and here you are going to, you know, there really are crucially important meetings, and people just show up and see what happens. It's nuts, really.
Do you think it's possible in preparing for an interview, Paul, to pretty much identify or anticipate, I should say, pretty well most of the questions you're likely to be asked?
Well, you should be able to. I mean, you should be able to. You should know a little bit about, if you've done your homework, of course, about the company and about the job and about the industry. And you should know where your strengths and weaknesses are on your own CV. You know the line, Sean, that a liar needs a good memory. Well, I mean, you're not telling any lies. It's easy to remember things at the interview, because you're only telling the experience you have, but you're packaging it really well. It's a bit like...
And I suppose it's important as well, maybe, whatever about anticipating the questions, you should probably be able to identify the things that you really feel are points you must get across.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, isn't there a line in politicians, you'd know all about this anyway, isn't there, that they say that regardless of the question that they're asked, that they know what the answer is anyway. And in an interview, I suppose you're probably going into an interview saying there's three or four key points that I want to get across about myself, and make sure that they get across on the day.
And again, it's something that you really have to prepare for, in the same way as you might prepare for a date or something like that. It is a date, really.
I'd be surprised, Sean, if I think people would put more time into preparing for a date than they do for interviews sometimes. You just don't realise, you know, there's a couple of big opportunities in your life to get a job, and why people just kind of rock up on the day and see what happens. As I say, I think it's nice.
But as somebody who would be employed as maybe an expert outside interviewer on the other side of the table, are there particular things that constantly surprise you, Paul, that, you know, just basic mistakes people make?
Oh, just, I mean, sometimes it's bizarre. I mean, sometimes I'm at kind of low level jobs, but in my history, one guy asked me, had we got a bicycle shed, was the one that sticks out in my mind, you know? And I just laughed afterwards. I said we had, but he didn't get his chance to park his bike there.
This was when he was asked by the interviewers, by the people who potentially were going to hire him, have you any questions?
Yeah, and I had another memory of it. We asked someone one time, and usually, you know, there's, to some extent, because interviews, they're always tight for time. And when you get asked, is there any questions, you have to think of one or two things, and you have them thought up in advance. I remember a person taking out a typed list, and it was about 27 questions on the list, you know. And the last thing someone, an interviewer, wants to see is a list of 27 questions in the last 5 minutes of the interview. So again, you think through two or three cleverly thought out questions about the industry or relevant to the job that you're applying for.
Right. Now, what about somebody who is in a job but is thinking maybe it's time I moved or there's a promotion coming up or whatever? I mean, a typical example, somebody was in touch to say, look, I'm working for a large insurance company for the past 10 years and without knowing why, my career seems to have hit a plateau. Is there anything I can do to separate myself from the rest?
There's several things that somebody can do that finds himself, whether it's in an insurance company or any company. There's six things come to mind if we can just kind of run through them, right? The first one is to think about that, you know, you do your today job superbly well. I mean, there's a line that the best way to take care of tomorrow is to do today's job superbly well. The second thing is to think about how could the day job be done in a better way than it's being done at the moment. And this questioner is from an insurance company, so maybe claims are running at a particular number or whatever, taking 40 days to settle or whatever. So could this person influence that and reduce the number of days? So could you reduce the 40 to 20 or whatever? So it's a kind of a day job plus strategy, for want of a better phrase. The third thing, and this is a bit awkward, Sean, is to find out what's the current perception of you. In the sense, have you got really good feedback on yourself in the organisation? Now, feedback is like a kind of kryptonite to Superman.
We all want it to be get it.
Yeah, because we think of it in a negative way. But sometimes people, they just, and often you see this, often with people who are often quite clever, I mean, they kind of trade on their cleverness, but they don't really understand how they're seen in a roundabout way. So I would say going after feedback, real feedback, not just performance appraisal feedback is a great thing.
Where do you get that? Do you just sidle up obsequiously to the boss and say, look, how am I doing here, you know? Or are there people maybe at your own level, or do they have to be above your level, who will give you an honest and fair assessment?
Well, in some organisations they have a system for doing this called 360 degree feedback, which I'm sure you've come across before, in which you get a kind of a sort of a round the clock view from peers, subordinates, etc. Even if that doesn't exist, I'd say people should go after feedback in their organisation anyway. There's loads of ways to do this. Worth looking it up on the internet, how to do it and how to position that so you don't, you know, come across as being too needy or whatever. But worth doing that, because really getting accurate feedback on how you're seen is really, really important, especially early on in your career. The fourth thing, just rolling it on, is to think about finding an internal, or some people choose an external, but an internal mentor, someone more seasoned and more senior in the organisation that can help you, in a sense, kind of navigate the politics and, you know, navigate your
mark
way through
your
the
card,
system.
In other words,
mark
yeah.
your card and kind of, you know, someone who's on your side. Sometimes they can be influential in decision making at forums in which you're not a part as well. So it can have a dual benefit. The fifth thing, Sean, is a kind of an interesting one for me, is the idea of a zigzag career. People think of their careers in a very linear way. So they start off at level 4 and they move to level 3 and to level 2, etc. But lots of people make good careers by moving aside. If they work in the insurance company, again, staying with this lady's query, if they work in risk or whatever, maybe they'd move into an operational role or into an IT role or into an accounting role, etc. So thinking of sideways moves, people sometimes say, why would I do that? It's a sideways move. But sometimes you need a couple of sideways moves before you can kind of move vertically. And the final thing, I mean, and it's kind of an interesting one. I mean, you always have the option to leave. If your career is being blocked for whatever reason, sometimes, you know, you're junior, you're an apprentice, you make a few mistakes. Sometimes organisations have long memories and they can't forget that you were a junior. Sometimes it's a bit hard to be a hero in your own country. You sometimes need to leave and then come back, or leave and move somewhere else.
And Paul, there's another one now that came in, a query that came in since you were here last time. I've completed college and have a good degree, a 2-1 in business. Over the next 2 years, I will also complete an MBA or some other postgraduate programme to add to this. In addition to the formal academic training, I'm interested in key personal skills that I need to develop. Now, is there some hierarchy of importance or hierarchy of skills that would somehow fuel up my prospects of success?
Well, congratulations to the person writing in anyway. Isn't it great to get a 2-1 degree? It's a terrific achievement. And it's great. And it's great also that they're thinking about going back and doing something else to add to that. Whether they need to do something formal in an academic sense or not, you can make that argument both ways. I often think of a kind of an ABC in my mind, Sean, around this question, right? The A is for assertiveness. I think one of the kind of generic skills that people need in organisations is to be assertive, being assertive around their own career as a first step. But I think, if you forgive the slight bad language, that there's a kind of an organisation line that the meek shall inherit the shit. In organisations, being meek tends not to be a route towards success.
You can be taken for granted, maybe?
Taken for granted, yeah. Now, I mean, you can over-egg assertiveness as well, and it can spill over a line into being kind of aggressive and difficult to deal with. But I think you practice assertiveness in small ways, like going to the gym for the first time. You start lifting small weights.
You don't have to, and also maybe it's a question a bit like, you know, to take a sporting analogy, you don't have to play dirty, but sometimes you can let them know you're there.
You have to let them know you're there in organisation terms. So that's the first A. The second thing is B is, you know, almost, I won't say the word, but it's almost, you think of someone as being a beef or what we normally...
I can think of three B's already, so let's just take that as red, yeah.
Let's take that as red, right? If you're the biggest tripwire for people in organisations is this inability to deal with other people, inability to work with other people, inability to work in teams, inability to lead or supervise other people. So if that's not a natural skill for you, if that, for some people this comes really easy, Sean, as you well know, and they don't need any training or whatever, they just kind of have it from birth. If it doesn't come easy for you, you have to learn it. And adults learn by doing, and you can learn to work with people in the same way as you can learn to drive a car or learn to use a computer. So, but you have to be put in a situation where you're in the game. So I think getting a job as a supervisor, as a junior supervisor, getting a job leading, working with teams, working with other people, and getting feedback on how you're doing in that job is really important, especially early on in your career.
Right, but just on the question of not being a bee, I suppose it's how you relate to other people. Isn't that what that's about?
How you relate to other people. And it locks us in nicely to the last kind of the ABC into the C. I think the C, and I heard your previous presenter yesterday on the show, she was talking about the children's hospital and getting the feedback from the kids about the new kids' hospital. And even the kids were saying, even at that age, how important communication skills was for doctors. It's amazing that they'd even twigged at that young age. And they were talking about the doctor's bedside manner as being an important piece in the mix.
But Paul, is that something that you're either good at or aren't, or is it something you can acquire and maybe practice?
I think it's a bit like golfers, Sean, and you'd know this well, right? I mean, some people have great natural ability and some people don't. And those who don't have great natural ability can take lessons and get better. Now, you may not be a world-class golfer, but you can certainly improve from where you are. Communication skills is exactly the same. There's three elements to it. There's the ability to make presentations, which absolutely can be learned. Absolutely. Organisations like Toastmasters here, if you have no money, if the organisation doesn't have money to fund you, you can do it yourself. Making presentations. The ability to write well through practice, through writing a blog, through practice and emails, etc. And thirdly, the ability to listen. And I often think that the ability to listen is the most underrated communications ability of all.
Why?
Because it's not taught, Sean. It's not, there's, you know, unless you're training to be a therapist or a counsellor, ability to listen is not taught anywhere in the curriculum.
Yeah, there's this concept, I think it's called active listening, that psychologists will use and counsellors. So, I mean, what are the elements that go to make that up?
So the name active listening is interesting, isn't it? That it says listening because it's not passive. So you're not just kind of sitting there and you know the old line, and we've heard it a million times, Sean. I'm sure you've heard it a million times on the show here, that for most people, the opposite of listening is not, the opposite of talking is not listening. The opposite of talking is waiting. So they're not actually listening to what the person's saying. They're just waiting to make their own point. And so the active listening idea is that you're actively engaged, you're watching the other person, you're watching their body language, you're picking up on what they're saying, you're trying to pick up on what they're not saying, you're picking up on the nuances of what's happening here. And then you're actively listening and then reflecting back that listening in a way that the other person can understand that you've heard them. So it's quite a skill. It's quite a skill and quite an underrated, in my view, quite an underrated skill for career and life success.
Lots of very useful observations and advice there, Paul. There's more I could ask you about, but I think we're going to have to leave it until another day, because there's quite an amount there for people to digest. Paul, thanks indeed for coming to the studio.
Thank you very much, Paul Mooney. Thank you.